being in security, you're constantly having to learn new technology so that you can break it, so you can understand how it works under the hood. And AI is no exception. The biggest piece for us is it's not just, you know, a new web application framework or, you know, a new web server technology. It's a brand new attack surface with a lot of really interesting new attacks that can be conducted against it. And so it's not something that you test once and you're done.
Nobody's interested in security until something breaks, and then it's all we can think about. So on today's episode, I want to get inside the AI security mindset with two people who know it best. One is a real-life hacker who just happens to lead a security team at IBM called X-Force. Yeah, you heard what I said, X-Force. The other, a senior security architect at AWS. Joining me now, Chris Thompson. What's up, Chris?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Chris, welcome to the show. I gotta ask you, how did you get here?
I've had the great privilege and honor to build the adversary services, or the red team, at X-Force Red over the last 8 years. So that team is really focused on hacking into big banks or defense contractors or nuclear power plants, and you know, showing how we can achieve objectives and not get detected.
Can you tell me a little bit about the people that you work with there at X-Force Red?
We have over, I think, 180 hackers here. Everyone contributes, whether that's in vulnerability management or application security testing. We're on the red team. Last year, for example, we spoke at Black Hat Security Conference 6 times. We put out some really innovative post-exploitation tooling, a lot of open source security testing toolkits for the community to use.
Chris, we've actually seen some things get broken recently, you know, a lot of big security breaches. How has Gen AI changed what hackers are doing and how you work?
Being in security, you're constantly having to learn new technology so that you can break it, so you can understand how it works under the hood. And AI is no exception. The biggest piece for us is it's not just, you know, a new web application framework or, you know, a new web server technology. It's a brand new attack surface with a lot of really interesting new attacks that can be conducted against it. And so it's not something that you test once and you're done. Especially the risk is compounded because of how many companies are rushing to slap AI into every product under the sun. And they're trying to, you know, have that first mover advantage, and they're not pausing to really perform proper risk assessments. So we're finding when we test these Gen AI applications and these traditional ML, you know, use cases, is we're seeing a lot of these environments that have been set up without proper authentication. They're allowing code execution in the backend production environment. They're allowing us to get access to enterprise data lakes. And, you know, it's really just a symptom of people trying to move way too fast and worry about security problems later.
What does a day look like at X-Force?
Typically, you know, we would hear from a customer that it's about to roll out, you know, a new financial application or a new foreign exchange platform or maybe a new banking platform. And they'd say, hey, we're integrating this chatbot so a customer can perform a wire transfer or look up account history, for example. And so we're looking at, from a traditional web application perspective, what are these traditional attack paths that we need to be concerned of? And what are the new types of attacks that we need to worry about in these multimodal chatbots and these multi-turn chatbots that are interfacing with different APIs on the back end? So we need to figure out, hey, how is this functionality being called? Could an attacker really ask this chatbot to load insecure code from the internet? Could they build, you know, some sort of code execution flow within the chatbot itself? And so there's a lot of new attacks that we really need to be aware of and threat model as we're testing these applications to ensure that, you know, we're not seeing customers end up in the news.
When these companies are rushing to integrate AI, you mentioned just how dangerous it can be if you move too quickly with it. What percentage would you think are actually secure?
That's really tough. I think there's so many components to leveraging AI into a solution. You have the models that go into these applications that are being trained and tuned and, you know, downloaded from Hugging Face and evaluated. You have the model training and tuning environment itself You have the whole MLSecOps pipeline, which is new.
What's your first step when you're starting to hack a new Gen AI project?
It's taking a kind of a risk-based approach to threat modeling. So is this just a sales chatbot that's going to help somebody, you know, pick a widget off of a storefront? Or is this, you know, a healthcare application that's going to allow you to query previous diagnosis from your medical history, right? And so we start to think about how sensitive is the data that's being pulled into this application from enterprise production environments? And then what, different systems is this interfacing with? Is this making calls to like an Epic healthcare database? Is this making calls to like a customer relational management system? How are those APIs secured? You know, what's being exposed publicly? What's privately? What can we hit from within the Gen AI solution? And then we come up with a testing plan and we say, okay, you know, this type of testing is appropriate for this, whereas, you know, this we can spend a little less time on. We also try to push a lot of teams to not just think about the front end solution, because we're seeing a lot of code execution and platform compromise and you know, a lot of it's private and not hit the news, and we just happen to hear about it from different customers or from partners. We think it's really important that customers start to think about, you know, again, that end-to-end flow of how did we evaluate these models? How do we know about the AI supply chain and kind of an SBOM or software bill of materials that is part of the solution? Where are those Python packages being downloaded from? You know, who rolled out my AI as a service platform, and who configured it, and who enabled logging, and really helping customers to challenge assumptions around all of that kind of back-end development and production environment and flow. So that way in the future, when, you know, another AI supply chain attack happens and some Python package got backdoored, for example, customers can quickly say, okay, I know exactly what I used in my solution and I don't have to worry about it.
Obviously, AI is still a very new field. So I need you to be honest with me on this one. From your POV, do we actually have the people or the skills that we currently need in order to properly secure AI? Like, is there a skills gap somewhere?
There's a massive skills gap. If you went on LinkedIn 3 years ago, the amount of people that said they were data scientists or AI security experts versus 3 months ago is night and day, right? Everyone's claiming to be an expert in this field, or they're rushing to train up. And the reality is there's just a massive skills shortage. There's already a huge skills shortage in security already, and now this is a new, you know, brand new space that we need to be constantly, you know, upskilling our both our internal security staff, but also, you know, making developers and data scientists and management aware of those different security risks, and making sure that, you know, we're partnering with the right people that come help test, or we're building out that skill set in-house.
I'm trying to figure out whose responsibility it ultimately is, though. Like, is it the developer's responsibility to be thinking about security as they go about building their projects, or is it somebody else's?
Yeah, great question. I think it comes down to a shared responsibility model and having those discussions with your vendors and your different developers and your data scientists. You know, a lot of people that are training and tuning these models, they say that the security of the model is not their responsibility. And, you know, I liken that a lot to, you know, a web application developer saying, I don't need to code an application securely, just put a web application firewall in front of it, right? It's a WAF is not a good replacement for secure code, just as a, you know, AI firewall or guardrails are not, you know, a good solution for securing models. So it's a shared responsibility for whoever's training and tuning those models or supplying those models. It's a shared responsibility with the developers and the production teams to build out, you know, decent guardrails. So, you know, they might not prevent every attack, but you can at least, you know, have a canary in the coal mine and know if your application is attempting to be abused or whatnot, or your solution's being abused. And then it's, you know, having those conversations with your AI as a service vendors, like, you know, Azure ML or Watson X or AWS SageMaker. You know, what testing has gone into this platform? how do I show provenance of the models and the AI supply chain and that, you know, that SBOM? How do I know what testing you've done on this platform or this application that you've built for me? And what expectations do you have of myself for testing my application as it goes live?
Since you are a hacker, and I'm assuming that you enjoy your job, do you get excited when you find a gap?
Absolutely. It's what we live for. As much as we love, you know, breaking stuff and finding gaps and circumventing all those controls, it's also, you know, as you are in the industry for a while, you kind of get tired of only burning things down. And so starting to have those relationships with the blue team and with the developers and saying, hey, we're tired of finding this bug in every single application you create. You know, let's take a look earlier on in the development life cycle. Let's solve this from the start so it doesn't make its way into every app. These are the controls you should put in place, or these are the detections you should have. And if those primary controls fail, here's how you should be, you know, approaching this.
Well, then what's your favorite thing that you've ever hacked, Chris?
Definitely some breaking into some military bases back in the day was a lot of fun. We've hacked major sporting events, most of the big banks and you know, exchanges in the world, nuclear power plants, defense contractors, chemical manufacturers. It's telcos, law enforcement intercept systems, everything you name it, we've hacked it. And I've had the pleasure to lead, you know, the majority of big engagements.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. It's funny, I feel like I felt my anxiety spike some when you were talking, but then I also felt relieved at the very end when I was like, oh, but that's okay. He's one of us. He's one of the good guys. So yeah. I really appreciate you. Thank you for that insight. I feel like we could really just talk about hacking all day. So now, knowing what we're dealing with in terms of risks, let's find out how you deal with it from AWS's resident security expert, Mumita Saha. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Albert.
So let's get straight to it. How has Gen AI changed your job?
It has definitely revolutionized the whole security landscape. It has introduced both challenges and opportunities. Specifically in my job, I know that now I first need to understand how Gen AI works so that I can understand how can I secure it. We also need to make sure, given as an architect, when I'm trying to design new solutions or trying to do a migration, I need to be more conscious about the tools I'm using. Am I able to leverage Gen AI for an efficiency in my current work? That is one landscape where we are trying to learn Gen AI, learn the benefits of Gen AI and leverage it. So it has definitely impacted, I would say, in a more positive and exciting way, because now I'm trying to learn new things and implement it at the same time.
Can you give me an example or two about the kind of challenges that Gen AI can pose, you know, through the hands of bad actors for you, but then also how you've been able to mobilize the power of Gen AI?
Gen AI has revolutionized our whole hacking landscape. Like on one hand, it introduced new attack vectors and amplified the existing threats, generating more convincing phishing emails, generating more deepfake audios, or even crafty, evasive malwares. On the other hand, AI-powered tools can automate and streamline vulnerability detection. Vulnerabilities have always been there in our security landscape, rather in the industry, be it any industry. So we can now leverage the AI-powered tools, and it can help us automate and streamline the vulnerability detection process. It can help us enable faster and more comprehensive security assessments. We cybersecurity professionals must adapt rapidly, employing AI for defense, while simultaneously, we have to mitigate the risks posed by the AI-driven threats.
What's the most common mistake that people make when they're securing their data or their AI?
As I have been fortunate to also write a white paper, have been part of a white paper we have collaboratively featured a few months ago on securing Gen AI. And we have stated in our white paper that only 24% of the current Gen AI projects have a security component in it, even though 81% of executives say secure and trustworthy AI is essential. As you can tell, this suggests that many organizations are not prioritizing security for their AI initiatives from the start. That is a potential oversight. Like nearly 70% of executives say innovation takes precedence over security when it comes to Gen AI. Now, deprioritizing security in favor of innovation could lead to some vulnerabilities. The number one mistake that we can surely fall into is neglecting the security fundamentals or having an immature security culture in our organization, which can leave our organizations ill-prepared to address the conventional threats like malwares, social engineering that take new forms with Gen AI.
You talked about prioritizing innovation over security. So with that prioritization, let's say that some of the companies that are listening to us right now either did do that, right? They rushed to get AI ready and they bypassed the security. They thought, you know what? We'll just do this later. What can they do now? What's the first thing that you would advise that they do in order to rebound, in order to rectify that situation?
One immediate step that we can take is to conduct a comprehensive security audit risk assessment. Best, in my opinion, will be to pause the deployment right now and then conduct the security assessment instead of doing them in parallel. But if in some organization, in some business, if that is not a possibility, then at least just run the security assessment in parallel to whatever you're doing right now. This audit should be performed by a team of cybersecurity experts, can be from your own organization or you can hire from any of the other cybersecurity firms that you trust in. And who can identify the vulnerabilities, the potential attack vectors, the security gaps, and the area of non-compliance with your industry standards and the AI initiatives that your organization have taken. Second will be conducting the right threat modeling to uncover the security gaps in your AI environment and to determine how the policies and controls need to be updated to address those new Gen AI threats. Then conducting right kind of penetration testing to simulate those attacks and to identify the potential vulnerabilities that can be exploited. And then finally, I would say evaluating the systems to understand how the data is handled and the data handling practices like access control, encryption mechanism, and other potential points like networking. And the most important part of this assessment should be a detailed report. As a security engineer, consultant myself, I believe that if I just come to my customer or my partner with the problems, that won't help them, right? So I think a key output of this assessment should be a detailed report. I should be able to guide or recommend. I'm not saying you to do this and that, but I can give you a recommendation if I'm doing an assessment.
In your experience, what's the number one potential AI-related attack that's most likely right now? And how can that be prevented?
If I have to call out one top AI-related attack that concerns our C-suite, which I have read on, is adversarial attacks on the AI systems. These attacks involve manipulating the input data to an AI model to deceive the model in a way that it causes the model to make incorrect predictions or classifications and generate harmful outputs. These attacks exploit the trust and reliance we have placed on the AI systems, and it can have severe implications on the security and integrity of the systems that organizations depend on.
So this is going to be a rapid fire round where I'm going to list some different scenarios, objects, I guess, and I'm going to ask you just for a simple yes or no for each of these as I call them on out. Using Gen AI, hackers can compromise the following: your phone.
Yes.
Your TV.
Oh, yes.
Your IT system.
Yes.
Oh, your car.
Yes. Depends how advanced I have built my car, but yes.
Oh, well, me too. This is a lot. Okay. Your home internet.
Kind of. I am trying to say no, but again, if I don't set up the right measures, then yes.
Okay. Your refrigerator.
Not right now, but again, yes, if I was using the IoT version of my refrigerator.
And finally, your dog.
Oh. You know what? Yes, probably yes. Yeah. And I can give you a use case for all of them, but yeah.
How can Gen AI hack your dog?
So deepfake audios. Say I'm working and I am not always home with my dog. And I have a device through which I can talk to my dog when I'm not at home. Now, if that device is compromised and compromised with deepfake audios, the Gen AI bot can actually fake my exact voice. Just not my dog, even my friend, my mother, who knows me very well, right? And if my mother gets a call, not from my phone number, because my phone is with myself. So the Gen AI bot will not have my phone number, but say if I'm calling from a different device and that is the deep fake audio they do. And if my, coming back to the dog's reference, if I'm saying something to my dog and my dog is very well behaved, listens to me, and I tell him or her to do something in the house, which can become very scary. I can just say, just go to the backyard and go to a neighbor's house and get out of the house. So deepfake audios is definitely something to look out for. So that's why we should be always evaluating whoever is calling us or how it is happening. So
okay, well, we're leaving this feeling a lot more confident, I guess. That was, I think that you've given me so much to chew upon right here. So I thank you so much. And in fact, Mamita, I appreciate all the time that you shared with us today. This has been beyond insightful. I'm going to speak on behalf of the listeners and viewers, if I may, and say, like, whoa, you know, you've given us a lot to look out for, but then also you've given us some great confidence and faith in what can be done utilizing Gen AI. So I appreciate you for that. Now, again, I also want to give a shout out to Chris. Thank you, Chris, for joining on today's podcast. And friends, that's it for today. So thank you all for listening. Thank you for watching. And of course, if you have thoughts, please post them in the comments below. And I promise we'll see you again soon.